Poonam Gandhi is a sociologist and a professor at Flame University's Department of Sociology. Her areas of research interest include art and culture, gender, and human relations. In this episode, we discuss her co-authored publication, Museums and Heritage Sites, The Missing Link in Smart City Planning, a case study of Pune City, India. Professor, and welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here today, and I'm very excited to know about yourself and about the work you've been doing. So to get us started, I'd just like to know a little bit about yourself, about your academic background, and more specifically about your interests in urban sociology and smartification, which is, like the topics that we'll be like discussing as part of your research paper today.
Right. Thank you so much, Abha, for inviting me. We've been actually discussing this over email, and there was a slight delay from my end, but I'm happy to actually be a part of this conversation. So to tell you about myself very briefly, I have been associated with sociology for a long time. I've been teaching in the university for almost two decades, 20 plus years. And it's absolute joy to be exploring, various domains within sociology. And I have traversed through, art and culture. That's where I began with my doctoral work, and then moved on to, other kind of subfields like aging and gerontology. Urban sociology or urban studies is something that has always interested me. And I had the opportunity to collaborate on a research project with other Flame University professors, Professor Prasad Pathak and Professor Chaitanya Ravi. So this particular research project is on cultural heritage and smart cities, and Pune being a rich, culturally rich kind of a city, we thought we could look at the growth of the city and try and see whole connection between the smartification process and the cultural heritage that Pune has. So that's about the brief introduction. If you have any questions, happy to answer them.
Yeah, and in fact, I think to sort of move forward and to sort of look at the publication that we'll be speaking about today. Right? So you've looked at museums and heritage sites, more specifically in Pune. Not conflict per se, but how a lot of the focus has essentially been like the technical and like the infrastructural parts, and not so much on the culture. So I think along those lines, I'd just like to know a little bit about the smartification process, quote unquote, and how exactly smart cities differ from regular ones in India, at least.
Right. So, India has witnessed unprecedented urbanization in the recent years. And the government of India in 2015, they launched this entire smart city mission, which was to transform cities, to bring them into this whole technocratic or technologically harnessing the growth. And the focus, of course, was in economic development. So the aim of the mission was to drive this economic growth, drive this economic development, and in turn, improve the quality of life of people by enabling some kind of local development and growth through technology, and try and create, so-called smarter outcomes for citizens. Now, when you look at the goal of this whole mission, it was, of course, to upgrade, so-called kind of make these cities, Indian cities, livable, also enhance the quality of life of the people. And in the process, maybe, try and plug in some infrastructural deficiencies. So that was the whole, focus or aim of the smart city in India. Currently, the selected cities are each at various stages of development, and the totality of all these projects have significant implications for the entire trajectory of Indian urbanization or Indian cities and their smartification.
Right. I think especially in the paper, you speak a lot about these, you know, technical and infrastructural aspects. I mean, like from what I understand of Pune as well as a city, right? It's not really as metropolitan as, you know, a city like Chennai or Mumbai. But then on the other hand, you know, I think it definitely is, you know, like more developed than a lot of other, you know, like cities in that aspect. So I think I just like to know a little bit about what these aspects are, which like your paper, you know, has
about. Right. So, well, actually the smart city and the smartness, so-called smartness, are several indicators. You know, and these indicators or these criteria are clearly mentioned in the Smart City Mission portal of the government of India. But specifically with Pune and Pune Smart City Mission, the focus is on the technology, focuses on techno-infrastructural development. And through this development, the idea is to increase mobility, to enhance digital connectivity. So some of these upgrades retrofits, you know, which the mission promises, are things like, you know, Wi-Fi zones. So free Wi-Fi zones throughout the city, where there'll be some designated spaces where people can actually, you know, use Wi-Fi freely. Or then smart city redesigning. So there were some streets which will be or which are identified. And they would want to redesign them. Smart places or smart spaces, so-called, you know, street lighting was one of the, you know, important kind of missions. Then CCTV cameras and crowdsourcing of solutions. All of these were part of this whole smartification process. See, when you look at the overall approach of Pune Smart City Plan, it is, of course, through this technological deterministic kind of a path, you know, where you have the hard infrastructure such as roads and bridges and metros, and along with them, the soft infrastructure, you know, which would be increased in Wi-Fi connectivity, and assume that, you know, through this kind of digital upgrade, you would be able to upgrade the city as well. So this was what the focus was. These were the techno infrastructural aspects which would enable improvement of the city, which would enable the life of people, the overall quality of the citizens and the residents of Pune. So yes, that was the aim.
Right, yeah. Like, of course, right? I think you do need to have the right infrastructure in place, of course. But, you know, but I think apart from that, right, like, as your publication also, you know, really specifies, right, that in the whole smartification process, the social, like, cultural aspects will really getting missed out on. So I think, like, along those lines, I just like to know a little bit about, you know, like, in general, like, what really has the heritage of Pune sort of been like, and what has the smartification process missed out on?
Right. Well, if you look at you know, some of the definitions or the literature review, which kind of looks at smart cities, where of course information technology is extremely important, but this is combined in you know, elsewhere in the world, when you look at smart cities, it's combined with the architecture, it's combined with everyday you know, objects, everyday life of people, you know, the social, the economic, the environmental problems which need to be addressed. So overall, a fundamental limitation of our smart city mission or the smart city focus was the overemphasis on hard and soft infrastructural combination alone, right? And any kind of a city would have a cultural geography which somehow seems to have got ignored. And when along with this physical and cultural geography, if we were to combine the hard and soft infrastructural infrastructural provisions, then yes, we would have a kind of a holistic development, holistic growth. Pune Smart City Mission, in fact, because of this overemphasis on techno-economic or techno-infrastructural development seems to have overlooked that our city has historically been historically and culturally been significant, and it has several cultural heritage monuments, places of tourist attraction. And we in fact looked at some of these cultural heritage places, the monuments, the museums, and how these spaces, these monuments and museums can in fact add to the overall development, add to the overall growth of the city. So the whole question that we were grappling with was whether the smart city mission somehow privileges the techno-infrastructural development of the city over the social and the cultural, right? The social, cultural, ecological development, which is significant, which should not be ignored. And even in the West, you would see, literature and studies which focus on how you identify the heritage ecosystems and try and integrate them with the smart city plans. So the need to incorporate these heritage ecosystems and align them with the economic growth, align them with the infrastructural development, that should be the focus. And that's where our project, focused on, to look at how, where the museums are located, which are the tourist sites, where are the monuments located in the city, where do we have the metro routes in the geography of our city, to examine whether the smart city mission, whether those plans have incorporated the cultural development of the city. And the focus on museums and monuments was because we considered both museums and heritage sites as important signifiers of culture, and the attempt was to identify how these could be integrated and why it is important to in fact integrate these cultural sites into the overall economic and development plans of Pune. So if we actually try and understand the cultural heritage, right, of Pune, we do have the current focus is on techno infrastructure, but we're talking about techno infrastructure aligning with socio-cultural ecological sites. And when it comes to operationalizing this entire project, the focus was area based, so there are specific areas, designated areas, and a few pan-city projects. But what about standalone museums, monuments, and increasing connectivity to these places through the current smart city projects? So though the goal, of course, was to ease mobility of the citizens, economic growth, because Pune is also an IT hub, the higher quality of material life, but what we are proposing is, ease of access to these heritage sites, higher quality of overall life. It's not just the material life, but how the popular culture needs to be integrated and the economic ecosystem, which is again the focus, needs to be connected with the heritage ecosystem. And that would give us a more holistic kind of a development of the city.
For sure. And I think to really add on to something you mentioned, right, which is that, we really have to look at these sociocultural aspects and more than just, looking at it as a checklist, of things to sort of check off, to meet the smart city requirements. You really have to sort of integrate it along with the techno infrastructural aspects, right? So I think in that sense, it makes it a little bit more complex. So along those lines, I'd just like to know, right, like, when you were doing your fieldwork and looking at these sites, how accessible were a lot of these heritage sites and museums and all of that? And have there been any technical or infrastructural plans in place that have really helped these sites become maybe more accessible or, more usable in that sense to a lot of the city dwellers?
Right. So two parts to your question. The first one, let me answer, you know, as a researcher. So the entire project was designed pre-pandemic, right? And the idea was to, of course, you know, to go on field and collect data, to look at also citizens' participation in the smart city project. So to reach out to the citizens, to reach out to citizens from different walks of life, apart from the people directly involved with the planning, you know, the planning and development, directly involved with the smart city mission. And due to the pandemic, you know, researchers would know that, and they do have to have flexible plans, a plan A and the plan B, which helps us, you know, approach the field. So with the pandemic, we did have to, you know, kind of make modifications. We had to push our field work almost 8 to 10 months ahead. And despite the pandemic, we were, of course, able to reach out to citizens, reach out to people in positions of authority where smart city planning and implementation is concerned. And if you look at the response, because the citizens and their participation, the citizens and their engagement with the smart city mission, you know, that itself is a separate paper that we are working on. And focusing on this current paper, if you were to look at you know, museums and heritage sites, then even the awareness about these places, these significant heritage sites itself was alarming, because people were aware of a few museums but didn't really know much about. We almost have, in and around Pune, we have about 32 museums and heritage sites. So people who could identify a few, some of them had visited some of these places, but majority of our participants and respondents had visited or had were aware of only a few. So that itself showed how, you know, there is this entire I would say you know, the cultural sites and the museums or the monuments, which don't really feature as something which is important, something that we should think about when you're planning for you know, development. And to answer your second part of the question, you know, whether the accessibility to these places, you know, whether there are efforts being made, well, our paper, in fact, has looked at, you know, the metro route and where these monuments and heritage sites are located, museums are located. And when you look at those, the maps and, you know, try and see and assess, well, we really don't see accessibility to these places, neither through any of the metro routes, nor do we see these places being featured as important places for the planning, you know, groups to look at and to chalk out plans in and around these significant places. So not really. So apart from just within Pune, you also have around Pune, you know, you have so many of these cultural heritage sites, you that though people would be aware of, we don't really consider these when we are looking at, you know, the metro lines, or we're looking at even for Pune Darshan, for instance, you know, there's this Pune Darshan routes that we looked at, the tourism, the touristy routes. So even when we look at these tourists, there's just a few that are focused on, and the rest are almost, you know, non-existent where tourism is concerned, or non-existent where citizens and their interest is concerned. So though we know that the museums and heritage sites are significant, we don't really see them featuring as they should be in the overall development plans of the city.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I think it sort of also shows us, right, how you know, at least when we imagine smartification, or at least when I thought about it, you know, I think about it, you know, like mostly in terms of accessibility and in terms of, you know, how convenient it is for everyone to, you know, access like basic resources. But now I'm, you know, also beginning to realize, right, that, you know, there is like this very big aspect of, you know, how aware we are of, you know, our own sort of, you know, like agricultural sites and all of that in like our own, you know, like cities, right, in that sense. So I think that perhaps maybe there is this element of, you know, marketing or, you know, like whatever it might be, you know, in really, you know, like appreciating and using all of like the different resources. And so, you know, I think to like link that up, you know, to the idea of budgeting, right? I think that, you know, the like another aspect that a lot of people talk about with smart cities is that the like the point is that it should not be really expensive to make a lot of these changes. That's essentially why it's smart, right? You're making these changes, but then at the same time, it's like relatively like more like cost effective in that sense. I mean, I'd just like to know a little bit about if we were to implement any such changes, like how cost effective, like would that be?
Sure. So, you know, when in our paper, in fact, we've looked at and we've tried to explain the significance of museums and what a crucial role they play in preserving the cultures. Museums for, you know, for most part of this century have contributed as the core in preserving, you know, as centers of archaeology and art history and, you know, where not only are artifacts are displayed, but there's a lot of research that happens around. These are places where you know, memories of different communities are stored, and so museums, in fact, you know, tend to document the lives, daily lives of people. So when you have museums which are almost like vital expressions of culture and heritage, right? Funding to these places, you know, apart from funds for the planning and the implementation of the smart city, I'm just talking about the funds that these historical, you know, monuments or museums need to get from the government, especially where Pune is concerned. We do not see that kind of approach where funding is available, you know, or then the government is making some efforts to change not only the perspective, but also the infrastructure within the museum. So, for instance, I don't know, Abha, if you've been able to go to the Raja Dinkar Kerkar Museum, which is the most popular one in Pune. It is, of course, it's located in a place which is interesting. It's right in the heart of the city. And it stands where it is today because of efforts by individuals who have funded it, because there have been people who have this is of course a privately owned collection, and they managed to, you know, make this museum a kind of a core tourist place. But if you compare this museum with the museum in Mumbai, you know, the Prince of Wales Museum or the Chhatrapati Shivaji Maharaj Sangrahalaya, there's this vast difference in terms of the displays, the way in which it's attractive, the kind of information that it provides. And this is, of course, because of funding. You know, at the end of the day, if you get funds, you will be able to transform the space and place. To add to my previous point of, you know, we in Pune, you have the War Memorial Museum, we have the Numismatics Museum, we have Cycle Museum, you know, Camera Museum, Vintage Car Museum, just to name a few. And apart from school children, you know, visiting these places, I think as researchers, we're also interested in knowing whether people, you know, the general public is aware of them, and whether they've visited them, visited these places. But unfortunately, our data, in fact, shows that not really, you know. And it's a vicious cycle, right? You don't have people visiting these places, and therefore you don't have the government really, you know, funding these museums. That's one aspect. The second aspect of whether, you know, how do you kind of bring in funds to incorporate this into this planning and development of the city. If you compare this to, you know, cities such as Washington, D.C. or Paris or London, you know, where you have the museums, which are a good example of how you can embed museums into city planning, you know, with entire implications for urban cultural growth. So these cities have already managed to do that, right? So what we would also like to, or we are suggesting, is that museums and monuments, in fact, act as a, you know, a space which would enable institutions, enable, you know, people, enable tourism, attract more people, and it can become a cultural hub with its planning, you know, especially the metro planning or the smart city planning, focusing on creating these spaces as the most attractive spaces or places in the city. Apart from this, you know, we also tend to see how in the West you have this whole inclusive culture getting enhanced through these places and spaces, you know, promoting learning, promoting understanding how you know, how inclusivity helps generate and create unity, create a kind of a peaceful space. And so that is definitely not the focus, right? So funds would only be available if there is a shift in paradigm, a shift in the perspective of what a smart city, or what is this whole smartification process? Is it only the digital aspect of it? Is it only Wi-Fi and connectivity that we're looking at? Because the smart city mission, especially in Pune, also they talked about, you know, street lighting, which would enhance mobility, which would create more safer places, which of course is very, very necessary. You know, CCTV cameras, which will make people feel more safer. Yes, walkability, you know, areas. So all of this is significant and important. But apart from that, if we could incorporate these aspects into the planning, then we would have, you know, a sustained kind of a techno-infrastructural, cultural, social, and ecological enhancement.
Right, yeah. In fact, a lot of, like what you just mentioned, also reminds me of, you know, my own time in Pune, right? Where I think apart from Yerwada Jail and Shaniwar Wada, nobody really spoke about any places in around like Pune, you know. I think as either as like, you know, to like go for like an educational trip or just, you know,
right,
for leisure, I think, you know, it's usually not something that comes up. So, you know, I think I just like to know a little bit about what might the opportunities be, you know, if we were to find out about these places, because as you mentioned, if like if Pune does have a lot of like these places, but they haven't been like discovered yet, right? Like what are like the opportunities for, you know, educational institutes, for students themselves, and for, you know, a lot of like professors and even like the localites and tourists, you know, like visiting the city, right? Like what value like,
would, yeah. In in fact, you know, any kind of culturally vibrant space, you know, culturally vibrant city needs to incorporate in its growth and development the cultural sites, museums, monuments, all of these. For a long-term sustainable kind of a, you know, culturally rich creation of a people and their engagement with the city. Because when you have, it's not just a place where people are residing and working, because that's how it ends up being, you know. But if people who are the citizens and residents of the city need to feel attached, you know, need to feel a sense of belongingness, that would also come, or that would also be generated from this whole sense of what the cultural heritage and history is about. Yes, there is a lot of pride in people when they talk of Pune and the entire, you know, the Maratha kind of a power. And the core of all of this is how the citizens feel that they belong to a particular space. Because Pune has seen a lot of immigrants. Since it's an IT hub, you have people from different parts of the country and the world now becoming residents of Pune, right? But how can we ensure that they also feel a sense of attachment to the city, even if it is for a brief period in time, right? They could be moving from, you know, one city to another for jobs. But having said this, I think it's important for people to enjoy, you know, engage with the space that they're living in. So, so when you look at the opportunities, if we were to create these opportunities, not just for, you know, school going children where they have an educational trip, but these spaces could become places where you have citizens from different walks of life engaging. You know, like Pune is known for its very vibrant theater culture, right? So there's a lot of experimental theater as well as popular theater, popular dramas being performed. Now, when we look at people who actually go and you know, who are the audiences basically, right? Are we able to even, you know, bring people from different cities who are now, you know, residing here for maybe work purposes? Are they engaging with this? You know, why are we even talking of Pune as a cultural center? Because we do feel that the city has so much in it, so much to offer in terms of culture, right? It's not just these museums and monuments anymore. We're looking at, you know, the art. We're looking at a theater. We're looking at performance, performing arts, music. All of these are significant when it comes to the identity of the city, right? And how can people identify with this identity of the city? It's only when we bring together all these in our overall planning, in our planning of the so-called Pune as a smart city. So the opportunities are there for us to create or make the city into this cultural hub, which is which has infrastructure, great infrastructure, which has metro routes, you know, which has connectivity, where people from the periphery could come and you know, to these hot spots, which would be like the hubs of culture and you know, art and culture and various performances. So that's the kind of city that we're talking of. You know, it's entire smart city planning and linking it up with cultural heritage. We also have, you know, the Film and Television Institute, for instance. We have, of course, music. You know, we have the Savai Gandharva, and so all of these are already active. Yet somewhere, we do feel that the engagement of the people or the citizens is not as high as it can be if we were to create those kind of opportunities and spaces for them.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, I think, you know, that is one of the advantages of, you know, having so many other smart cities also around Pune, right? Which is that, you know, like when you're like looking at like Pune as a smart city, you have a lot of references, you know, you can sort of see how like places have, you know, like gone like about the process. And even though, of course, it cannot be replicated entirely, there is a lot of inspiration to, you know, like take, I think, along those lines. So, yeah, you know, I think to sort of complement that, I'd just like to ask you a little bit about the literature review process and like what like your findings were.
Right. So, you know, it's Smart City, the entire Smart City mission. This is not something which is only happening in India. We also have, you know, elsewhere in the world, you do have many countries that have evolving smart cities. And smart cities, it can't be like, you know, the final destination, because this is an ongoing process, right? The priorities for each of these cities, you know, as literature shows, differs. So based on which cities prioritize what, you would have some kind of a unique definition to the smart city. According to our own, you know, Indian government, you know, the social, economic, physical, institutional development should be incorporated. But the question is, are they, right? a sustainable and inclusive growth is what we talk about, because this is in line with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And we envision the smart city mission in India also on similar lines. But when you look at the kind of work that has the kind of researchers and the work that has gone into understanding smart cities, you have Allaman Newman have suggested that you can't have just one kind of a plan, just like what you mentioned, one size cannot fit everything, right? Or every city. The solutions cannot work just based on these common solutions. Yes, you could kind of look at some of these already cities which have already embarked on the path and have become successful, and we can call them smart cities. But then Indian cities or locally, we need to understand that we need to view each of the cities as unique in themselves, with their own history, their own heritage, their own history of development and planning. And all of this needs to be incorporated. So what we, through the literature review, what we were able to highlight was that, one, there is no single kind of a definition or a single plan that can, fit any kind of city which is embarking on this whole smartification process. And so each city needs to have its own unique way of incorporating their own local culture into the planning process. We've had some important works even in India. So D.D. Gupta and Pandari's work, which explained that how Pune's growth, in fact, we can classify the growth into various periods, because Pune's growth itself, which has been researched extensively, right? That shows us how there is this whole the time or the frame time frame before the British rule, right? And then during the British rule, so that's like 1818 to 1947, and then you have this whole post-independence kind of a phase. So if you were to look at these three kind of historical phases, then we understand that how Pune itself has transformed and changed. And through this process of understanding this, we also note how there have been efforts to conserve, to preserve certain historical sites of prominence. But having said this, yet, like I mentioned earlier, the focus is no more on just or no more on these cultural sites. The focus for smartification of a smart city has moved or shifted towards the technology aspect of it, the technocratic aspects. And even through the literature review, right, this whole rapid urbanization that is taking place, we need to kind of pause and see where we are headed, or are we even achieving the so-called mission, of smartifying cities? So we need to reflect on the colonial history. We need to also reflect on and see how growth of each of these cities has taken place, and where we can, move, or what direction we need to take where planning is concerned. See, museums and monuments have, of course, been the core of the research, because, like I said, like I mentioned, it's a signifiers of culture. These are important. But how do we incorporate them is the question. In the paper, we've mentioned about places like, Hong Kong and Beijing, and how there's this people-centered heritage conservation initiatives that they have taken with the focus on, the social networks of heritage areas in Beijing, for instance, as well as the cohesiveness of the local community, right? So all of these give us insights into how we could adapt or even take cues from their planning and from their entire effort to conserve and preserve heritage sites. So, you know, properly, when you properly look at the smart cities across the world, we would be able to kind of also learn from their success and failure stories, right? But most importantly, what Datta has in fact highlighted in his own paper about Indianizing this whole concept of smart cities, you know, that is, we need to understand and focus the city's cultural heritage and to nativize the smart city mission. So in order to, one is, of course, we learn from the success and failures of other cities across the world, but we also try and nativize the smart city mission that we have embarked on. So yeah, that is the significance of what we could find out from the literature review.
Yeah, for sure. And one other aspect of smartification that, you know, I think has been repeated time and again is this concept of sustainability. I think it's a little, you know, like paradoxical, if I may say so, because, you know, if we're looking at museums, if we're looking at heritage sites, which were built so long ago, right? Of course, we can't, you know, change or alter them itself. But of course, we can alter our access to them and, you know, and like, you know, the way by which, you know, they are available to, you know, like not just locals, but, you know, like tourists as well. So, yeah, I think along those lines, I'd just like to know a little bit about how we can incorporate this aspect of, you know, like sustainability, especially if we're looking at sites that have been in Pune for like so many, you know, like years altogether, especially when the concept of smartification did not exist back then.
Right. Of course. Right. So I think, you know, creating economically productive, because at the end of the day, you are looking at the economics of it as well, right? So when we talk of development and growth, we look at economic development and growth. And though we would like to have sustainable development, yet the economics cannot be, you know, we can't ignore the economics of it. So if we were to create not only accessible places, you know, accessible heritage sites or museums, and but also make these as centers, attractive centers, right? This itself will generate, money and generate funds for furthering not just sustaining themselves, but also furthering this whole process of trying to bring in, you can say, technology within these spaces, you know, usage of technology. So now, you know, you have in museums, it's not just museums these days is not just places where you just walk across and just look at displays. You have a lot of interactive stuff that goes on, you know. So technology is enhancing people's interaction with the past, with the history, right? So on one hand, we're looking at we're talking of technology being used for access to these places. On the other hand, we should also focus on how technology can enhance these places, which will then in turn become very, very attractive. So, you know, Pune's example, in fact, shows that if we are careful about the planning and we are inclusive, right, then we can make it an attractive city with this whole, you know, sense of culture, heritage, history attached to it, and to make it not just an IT hub, but to live up to this whole cultural city kind of identity that it has had for over few decades. And urban planners, in fact, can look at how they can incorporate the elements of the heritage ecosystems into the smart city plans, because this will go a long way in trying to plan not just for the immediate future, but for the future itself, you know, where it just becomes, it's like in hand in hand, you know, you have both of these go hand in hand for it to sustain itself for a longer period of time. So what we're looking at is creating these kinds of, you know, that kind of urban landscape itself, for sustained smartification process. Because like I mentioned initially, it's not an end, it's not a end product that we're looking at, or, you know, it's like the city is going to evolve. It's going to evolve over a period of time. And your planning needs to look at not just the immediate future, but, you know, look at further down, right? And so one is, of course, funds which are required, but also to ensure that the funds are generated from within by making these places attractive, by making this more attractive to the tourists, by making people who are already residing in the city feel a sense of identification with the city, you know. And then the smart city projects, which we are extremely proud of, you know, will have achieved its mission of having smartified the city. And and the progress that we eventually will make will take along with the entire path is going to take along with its mission people from all walks of life, you know. So this whole inclusivity aspect has to also be highlighted. It can't be just for certain sections of the society, right? It has to be for all, because the city is a place where you have people from all backgrounds. So yeah, I think that's what we would, you know, a sustained kind of a way to ensure that these places become not just places of attractive touristy spots, but where they are able to sustain themselves in the future by generating funds for the sustainability.
Yeah, right. I think I like, sort of add on to that, and this may be a bit of an essentialization, but I think that, you know, especially when we talk about smartification, there are both tangible and not so tangible aspects, right? Because, you know, I think of course, on one, you know, like on one hand, of course, you want to make things look more, you know, like visually appealing and accessible. But then, you know, on the other hand, right, like ensuring access to each and every one, like thinking about it from the point of view of, you know, like the different layers of society you have and like what appeals to whom, you know, I think in that sense, our needs and wants are also, you know, like very, you know, like different in that sense. And yeah, so I think, you know, like ideally, right, like a smartified city should, you know, be able to, you know, to cater to all these needs in like a utopian sort of world. But
right.
I mean, we can't always do that. I think, right. You know, that sort of leads me to my final question, which is that when we are like as a social scientist, right, I feel like, of course, it's very different from studying the natural sciences because we are studying human beings. So, of course, we have our own experiences and all of that that really, you know, like comes into play. I'd just like to ask you if you have ever felt that your background or experiences or identity has influenced the course of your research work and how this may have played a role.
Yes, of course it has. It definitely has, you know, and so my interest in not just, like I said, you know, sociology of art and culture, but also in family or in the urban studies is because I am engaging, you know, so I am a citizen. For this particular project, it just became very interesting for us to, in fact, engage with our own engagement with the city. You know, to question that itself, right? To question that what have we, so when, as researchers, when we were discussing and we were like, how many places have we visited to begin with, right? Where is it that we see a gap, you know, evident, you know, as not just academicians or researchers, but as just common citizens of Pune, you know, what is it that makes us, feel the sense of belongingness. So by questioning your own, you know, a researcher, though we need to be objective, but the subjectivity is going to kind of creep in, you know, when you are questioning and when you're trying to research anything. So with my own research, that is this particular, you know, project was very interesting because I, you know, grew up, my father was a museologist, and therefore I grew up, you know, Prince of Wales Museum. That's where I grew up. So I kind of felt extremely close to this whole idea of culture, heritage, museums, and why is it not a part of our entire smart mission that we are embarking on? Right, I think for every researcher, there are points in life when something really triggers and interests them, and you kind of catch on to that, and then dive deeper, and if something really interests you, then it automatically you kind of enjoy the process of researching, and so end result doesn't really matter anymore. It's just the process that is engaging and enjoying.
For sure, yeah. In fact, I think something else that also often comes up, right, is how I think subjectivity is also a strength in many cases, because when you can, really understand, right, this is how I know my subject matter, right? Like, this is how I've always associated myself with it. I think in that sense, of course, each different researcher has their own sort of, way of going about a certain topic. And, especially in terms of, their access to, either interviews or whatever the case may be. So I think that's about it from my end.
Yeah.
So thank you, Professor, for taking out the time today. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Ava.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do subscribe or follow. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at the handle DTRRH Podcast for further updates.